Welcome to another episode of How to Business, a podcast by the Small Business Development Center in Chattanooga, Tennessee. In this episode, Josh from our SBDC team and Samantha Safici from Thrive discuss sales funnels, creating a process for long-term account management, and software you can use to manage customer relationships.
I want to introduce our guest, Samantha Safici, with Thrive. And the reason I really wanted to bring her into this discussion is she's established herself on LinkedIn with her own community. She does a weekly Wednesday roundup where she's picking a particular topic. And to me, LinkedIn is so very important in many aspects of sales. So Samantha, welcome. Can you tell me what your thoughts are on LinkedIn and how it's worked for you and kind of how you've created that following?
Yeah, absolutely. Hi. Yeah, so I started doing these Winning Wednesday videos. They're really short. They're about 3 to 4 minutes long on any specific digital marketing topic that I think will be a benefit to small businesses, because that's my customer base. That's who I'm talking to. It's small businesses as well as small business advisors. And I know that one of the pain points in advisors and also small businesses is that just, you know, anything digital can be a bit overwhelming. Like, there's a lot of information online. There's just so much to learn, so many resources. So I figured if I can just kind of condense the important numbers and then a few top tips to help business advisors and small businesses in this specific topic, then I think that would be of value to them. So that's kind of what drove me to start making these Winning Wednesday videos. And then that also helps me connect with not only small businesses and advisors, but also Thrive is a huge company with thousands of employees. And that actually helps me have a relationship with them as well. So it's been almost three-tiered. It's been really great.
So it's building a bigger community.
Oh, absolutely. Excellent. Network is everything.
Networking is everything. And I'm going to segue lightly. You know, you work within this big organization. What is Thrive? Can you kind of share briefly what Thrive does?
What Thrive does is we're an end-to-end customer experience platform focused on small businesses and also franchises as well. And what we do is we focus on everything from that initial touch with the client. So when somebody is potentially searching for your business, your service, all the way through the business cycle until they leave a review or they decide to come back to your business. So everything on the back end, which includes things like making sure your listings are correct on Google, on Yelp, on Facebook, to organizing calendars, to marketing campaigns, all the way through payments and asking for reviews, all of that managed through one software, and that's Thrive.
And this is really good, because what we're doing is, in my mind, is this discussion is actually setting us up for, all right, we're going to have an initial discussion about selling and sales and theories related to that and some tools. But as the marketplace has become more competitive and more digitally oriented, it isn't just, what am I going to do to sell and how am I going to sell? But it's, how do I get to the customer? How do I sell to the customer? What do I do once I have the customer? And then after I've got the customer, how do I keep the customer? And that's some of the stuff that you focus on with Thrive, correct?
Oh yeah, you got it.
Okay. So I guess where I'm in my background, I was in sales for about 25 years in the hospitality industry. And to me, sales was always about not just my competition, but selling not against just my competition, but also selling to a consumer where it wasn't just, here, I'm pushing my product on you, but we're developing relationships. And to a large degree, a lot of our clients say, well, if I make the best barbecue since the dawn of barbecue, just because I make it, they're absolutely going to come. And that's really not the case. You know, you have to get them to want to try your barbecue. You have to tell a story. You have to make it something that's compelling, that's going to say, well, I want your barbecue and not XYZ barbecue company down the street. So kind of what I want to jump into as we think about sales process, when you're thinking about when you're selling this to, let's say, franchisees or business owners, how do you walk through and what are some of the big bullet points that you typically cover on the sales side that's important for a business owner to be seen by a customer?
I mean, for us, it's all about the customer journey and how their potential customers end up being real customers. So I always take kind of a consultative approach. So I'm asking a lot of questions. I'm asking about what are they currently doing? Where are they getting the majority of their customers? Just to kind of get a feel for where they're at, to get a baseline. Mm-hmm. And usually there's holes in terms of, you know, maybe a lot of their business are just word of mouth, which is great, but it's not really, you can't really influence that too much other than, you know, the service that you're already doing. Maybe they don't have a really active social media presence, or maybe they don't have an active listings management or search engine optimization. So especially to attain the customer, I think it's really important to control what you can. So having a sustainable social media presence where people will actually be able to interact with you if they want to, or having listings management where if somebody searches for you on Google, they're getting the same information on your Google My Business as they do on, you know, your Facebook page or on Yelp or on other listing sites.
One of the bullet points I had early on was, there was three things I had in my bullet points: understanding sales as a concept, two, creating sales funnel, and three, creating systems early on to help with long-term account management. Now, all of those each alone sound very daunting and very difficult, but it's almost like you have to, with every other aspect of your business, plan your plan and work your plan. So when you're talking with some of these early adopters or early stage businesses, do you have any thoughts or comments or recommendations that you make to them that help them understand the importance of starting their sales process, understanding implementation, planning their plan, and working their plan? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, first things first, it's really important to understand who your customer is and how they're going to be interacting with you. So is it going to be through, maybe it's through phone or through scheduling an appointment online or however you think it's going to be. I think it's really important to figure out your customer journey, your customer experience, and then find processes and systems that can back that up. So, because what you don't want to do is you don't want to say, oh, you know, I want to do social media, so I'm going to get this software over here that does social media. And then it's like, oh, and now I'm going to do automated email and marketing campaigns. That's really important. So I'm going to have to get this other software. And then they don't integrate, and then you get frustrated and you're paying two companies and that's a headache. So
you're pouring money down the drain at that point.
Yeah, exactly. So I think it's important to map out your customer journey, your customer experience, and then figure out what software, what processes will be best in place to kind of help guide customers through that, and have a real clear eyes as to what that looks like before talking to software companies. Because, you know, they can have all the bells and whistles, but if they don't do what you need, then what's the point?
You know, you bring up a good point. We start about mapping out a customer journey, and certainly the online is so very important, whether it's your own website, whether it's your Facebook listing, your Instagram listing, all of those things. But I almost think in a lot of cases with our businesses, it's something as mundane as, what is your marketing collateral? You know, if you're going to be, let's say, going out and trying to generate business out of your consultancy that maybe repairs medical equipment, well, you got to have something that you can drop off at the doctor's offices that says who you are, what you are, how that looks. So to me, it isn't just your online map. It's also what are you going to do to create a package of information that people can easily access, that understand what you are and understand how you're going to solve their problem, not just the widget that you're making. And I want to emphasize that to our listeners. Sales is not about what you're selling and what you make and how you make it. It's about filling a need and a problem that somebody else has. One of the comments that you made earlier is talking through that journey. You know, we've seen a lot of change in the last couple of years with technology jumping in. And I guess my question to you is, when you're talking to some of these businesses, how do you suggest they get started in their journey?
I think first things first is figure out your buyer persona. So who are you trying to target? Who are the people that are going to be buying from you? And you can have multiple buyer personas. You don't just have to have one single type of person that will buy from you. Maybe you have different kinds for different services or different products. But I think once you have clarity to that, and for buyer personas, the more specific you can be, the better. So if you can take a look at some market research, if you can interview some, maybe you don't have current clients, but who you think would be a client, maybe you have a friend or a family member that you can kind of interview to get an idea as to who's going to be buying from you. And then from there, you can figure out what their journey looks like. So from awareness to consideration to decision stages, that's how I kind of view the buyer's journey. So in the awareness stage, how are they finding you? How are they figuring out that they have this problem that needs to be fixed? So is it through Googling a specific problem? Is it through going to the doctor's office? Is it through asking friends and family? Is it through social media? So all of those are components of that awareness phase. And then you go into the consideration phase where they're aware of their problem. They're aware that there's all these companies that can kind of fill that void, be the solution. And they're taking a look at what all those solutions are. And then what kind of collateral do you need to provide to these people that maybe they went to your website and they looked at a blog or watched a video? Mm-hmm. What can you give to them to get them to that next stage, which is the decision stage? And to get there, what do they need to do? So do they need to book an appointment with you? Do they need to go to your office? Do they need to have a call with you? What can you do to kind of push them into that direction or guide them in that direction? I don't like push. and then once they're in the decision phase, what kind of collateral do you need to provide to them? What reassurance do they need in order to decide that, yes, you are the solution? So I think it's easier as a startup, as a company that's coming up, is to take a look at those three stages and then decide what they need to do in each of those three stages in order to guide the customer through.
I really like how you broke that up into three clear, concise stages. Because in the back of my brain, I was thinking one of the key rules was you have to touch people 7 times for them to understand who you are, get to understand what your brand is, and trust you enough to buy from you. So that kind mm-hmm. of is in that awareness and consideration stages. The other thing I also emphasized to people was you need to schedule time during your day that is uninterrupted, that you are actually reaching out to sell. And whether mm-hmm. you are calling people, whether you're networking, whether you are emailing, that you're not answering other people's emails or employees are banging on your door during that 10 to 11 o'clock in the morning or 1 to 2 o'clock in the afternoon. You're not doing anything else but outbound. You're calling mm-hmm. out. Do you do that pretty regularly?
Yeah, absolutely. I do it on Tuesdays and Thursdays. I have a two hour window blocked out for research and outreach. I personally don't like cold calling. It's just I'm really bad at it. I recognize that I'm not good at it. but I do much better with like sending video messages or sending LinkedIn requests, doing networking that way. I find that I just perform much better. That works for me. It works for our product offering a little bit better. So that's where I focus my 2 hours.
Look, I know when I first started cold calling, I got used to hearing no 100 times before I hear yes once, and it's kind of demoralizing. But it's almost like you got to try a bunch of different things to see what works for you, and just as importantly, what your customers are going to engage with. You know, obviously, times have changed, and you know, we like to have texts and emails and have our own personal experience. But you make a great point. I've got to have that time where I am doing my research, chasing down my client lists. So I think that's a great point. My comment to that was, I create silos of business for myself. So on Tuesday, I would chase one silo of business, whether it was the small business owner, small enterprise. And on Thursday, I was chasing after the big dogs. And in each of those cases, then my language would change a little bit when I was reaching out to people. What I was saying, how I was saying it, was more how they speak and not how I speak. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, it's adapting to your buyer persona. That totally makes sense to me. And I would just add to that, I think, especially nowadays, if they actually want something, then they can just easily start researching and, you know, do their thing. So cold calls and emails and that sort of thing, it has to be really well timed, or you have to be offering something. So I think as long as you're reaching out, if you're doing cold calling, if you're emailing, I think as long as you have something to share that's of value, or that you showed that you did your research, that you understand what they need, what they want, you'll have a much higher success rate than just calling someone and giving the same script on every single call. So adapting your language, giving them something of value, or just showing that you care, that you did your research, I think all of those will get salespeople further down the road than just, one size fits all approach.
As you were saying that, you got me thinking about something. And as we talk about sales all day long, and I can go into it for hours and hours, how do you like to close? Do you have any tricks that you like to use to just move that next step and let's get the business moving?
Our sales timeline or process is pretty long. Like, it's deals take from like 1 to 3 months, just because we're integrating with different softwares and there's a lot of different parties involved. So we take very much a consultative, like, we are here to help kind of approach. So once they have the proposal and they have it in front of them, they know how much it's going to cost, I just ask for the close, because we've been talking now usually for, we've had like 3 to 4 meetings. And so I just am direct, and I see if it's ready, if they're ready to go. And usually that's worked for me in the past. So I say, as long as everyone's on the same page, everyone's very clear on the deliverables and what they're paying, then asking for the close is a really great way to actually close the deal.
So what I was going to get to with that is that we have an assumptive sale, and then we also have a direct closing. And the thing that I found always the most successful was I worked through any roadblocks that I had with the client. All right, can we fill this for you? Can we fix that for you? Yes, yes, yes. And then the assumptive closes. So can you think of any reason why we can't move forward getting that contract done?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, making sure that we're addressing all of the gaps or the issues that they're having, making sure that we're addressing all of those and saying, okay, well, when can I expect the proposal back?
So your proposal is effectively its own invoice or contract, correct?
Once they agree that they're ready to move forward, we have our accounting and legal team that create the final proposal and send it over them for them to DocuSign. Perfect. And once that's signed, we go ahead and get moving on the project.
You know, to a degree, that's actually part of your sales journey anyway. And
oh, absolutely.
As we talk to small business owners, they should have all of that stuff ready to go through, as you said earlier, mapping the journey. It isn't just getting the customer. It's finding the customer, getting them engaged, getting them ready to buy. It's the awareness, the consideration, and the decision is, look, we got to get that contract ready to go. And in many cases, you can have templates that pre-fill that, all right, when I'm done hanging up, you will have already had final proposal. Let's get the ball rolling so we can get you scheduled for our startup, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, anywhere that you can remove friction, the better. So if it's a matter of making template proposals, making sure that it's really easy for this, the business as you know, the team as a business to get it to the client, you know, if that makes everybody's life easier, that's definitely the way to go.
Right on. Okay. So you bring up a couple of other things that I'd kind of like to jump into. You know, we were talking about mapping the sales journey and software packages that are out there. I do want to kind of jump into CRM tools or customer relation management tools that are out there in the marketplace. And I'm not asking you to say what's better about yours than the others. Just off the top of my brain, now certainly you as the consumer listening in can Google CRM all day long and you'll probably get Thrive and Salesforce and Zoho and Insightly and Fresh Sales and blah, 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 blah. But you giggle because I'm sure you hear that all day, every day. But how do you determine what is best if you're going to put yourself in the business owner's field? How do you determine what's going to be best for you now, and how you determine or what are some things you should be thinking about as you grow a year from now or 2 years from now when you're looking at your CRM?
That's a great question, because different CRMs have different functionalities. So you have, there's pretty much four buckets. So you have conversation CRMs, leads and deals, contact, and marketing. And there are CRMs that combine, that have all four or have, you know, two of the four. But depending on your goals and what you're looking to use your CRM for, there's definitely some that are better than others. And it also depends on things like, how much support do you need? Do you need that 24/7 support? Do you need like a specified person to be able to help you with your CRM? What kind of functionality do you need? Do you need to be able to send out automated email campaigns and drip campaigns? Do you need to be able to know where opportunities are and where your deal is? Or is it just something really simple where you just need a database to know who's coming into your website and have a place to store them, so you understand who are your customers and where they're coming from? So I think it's, and it's really important to know and understand what you need your CRM for, because the price can range wildly between CRM systems, because there are some CRM systems that are designed more so for those big enterprise clients. And then there's some CRMs that are industry specific. And then there's others that are made more so for the small business client. So no matter what, I would say to really do your research. Take, if you're in a specific industry, like, you know, if you're a hair salon or a restaurant or in the automotive business or a painter, there are industry specific CRMs for all of those businesses. Take a look at those, then take a look at some of the more general ones like Thrive, because we might not be as specific, but we have a really great team on the back end to help support the CRM as if you were a big enterprise client. And it has all of the functionalities of those really big ones like Salesforce and HubSpot, just, you know, kind of dummied down for a smaller business.
But it's almost like it isn't just CRM, but what else it integrates with. Like, for example, many of my clients use QuickBooks. And mm-hmm. when you're doing that search, is the CRM going to integrate with your accounting software? So that effectively it's saving you time that as you're doing your sales, it's kind of one less thing. You click a few buttons and a proposal's gone out to Mr. Smith based on what's already in QuickBooks, and they can pay for it online, kind of thing.
Right. Yeah. I mean, every business should come up with their non-negotiables. So it has to integrate with QuickBooks. There has to be a scheduling functionality. There has to be a payment processor. All of these things, if you can think of those things that you absolutely need in your CRM software, that will be much easier to kind of have that list and then be able to do your research and say, okay, easy. Thrive does this, HubSpot does that, Salesforce does that, and be able to kind of minimize it to a few. And then I always suggest to do a demo, because maybe you really like the interface of one CRM over the other. You can ask the demo specialist a lot of very specific questions for your business to see if it does integrate with maybe something specific to your industry. So do the demo. Usually it's, you know, it's zero commitment and it's free, so because they want you to buy their software. So get a feel for the software, ask all of the questions, and make sure to have a really good understanding as to what the contract is. Do you have setup fees? Do you have onboarding fees? Is it just a flat price? Can you upgrade? Can you downgrade? All of these questions so that you don't have that surprise invoice at the end of the month and or at the end of the year or the end of the quarter, and you're like, wait, what the heck is this? I didn't want this. So ask all of those questions. Yeah, don't shy away from those questions, because there are some like hidden onboarding and like service fees for some of these CRMs.
Boy, those are really useful comments. You got to know what you're walking into. And more importantly, when you're testing out some of these CRMs, I find that people have been in business less than a year and they figured out what their market is and they figured out what they should be selling, although that I'm sure they've pivoted two or three times. But when they realize I'm tired of doing my CRM on a spreadsheet and all I've got is names, email addresses, and phone numbers, but that really doesn't get them anywhere, that they really need to be thinking through that process. And just to your point of, I only do outbound calls Tuesdays and Thursdays, it's almost like I need to budget my time to, how am I going to implement a system that it's going to take me time on the front end? It'll probably be a little painful because you got to get used to it and get new to it, but you give it 90 days and you're like, I don't know how I ever survived without that kind of thing.
Absolutely. And it's a, you know, ideally you're choosing a CRM and it's going to be a long-term relationship with that company, because CRMs are a bit sticky, where you create processes and you create systems around your CRM. So it's a decision that, you know, you shouldn't take lightly, that you should definitely do your research and figure out what are your non-negotiables and figure out what company suits you best and suits your needs best.
Obviously you have different levels of it. Have you guys built in templates? So literally all they're doing is a push and play and they've added one more automated process. Is it pretty much something you guys do, or is it something that they get used to doing and they build their own process? How does that work?
We want to make it as easy as possible for the small business to do their business. So we have email templates. We have a ton of imagery and like for social media as well, we have libraries of posts and pictures, so that the small business doesn't have to spend hours on end trying to figure out what picture to use, what's the correct messaging, what can they use the emails for. Like if they want to, for example, send an email on everyone's birthday, maybe like a week before, so then when they decide to go to the restaurant for their birthday, they have this 10% code, right?
Right.
We have the ability where you can say, okay, create new automated email campaign. And there's actually literally a button that says birthdays, and you can choose that one. And it kind of has the wording. You can add the call to action. You can add the coupon to it, and you can set the date. So, you know, 7 days before everyone's birthday at 4 PM, they'll receive this email. And it'll automatically go out, as you know, as long as in your database you have people's emails. You know, you can include that in the form fill or at the point of sale or whatever. So we do try to make it as easy as possible for the one man band, to like the company with 50 employees, to be able to manage their business and create what they need to create on Thrive.
So all of these things we have to used to have to do manually, it's all being done electronically, which is great. But all of this information that jumps out at me is, we do all of this work, we do all of this marketing. What are your thoughts on reporting and understanding the data that you're getting from that?
Oh, it's key. Absolutely. I mean, it's important to know the industry standards, right? So for an email, any sort of email campaign, if you have, I think it's between 15% to 30% open rate, that's really good. And then a click-through rate, so when somebody opens your email and actually clicks on the call to action within the email, whether it's, you know, to go to a blog or to schedule an appointment or to go to a specific page, usually if you have about a 2% click-through rate, that's a pretty good campaign. Anything more than that, it's like, wow, like that people are really interested in what you have to say. Anything less, it's like, oh, well, you know, I guess they opened it, but they didn't receive what they were expecting, so they didn't click on the call to action. So I think it's important to know industry standards. And then with anything that you send out, whether it's a social media post or an email or a text, I think it's important to really understand the goal behind it. So if your goal for social media, for example, is just brand awareness, for people to understand that who you are, what you do, and what benefit you provide, then things like comments and shares and likes and clicks and that sort of thing, that those are the metrics that you want to take a look at, those vanity metrics, the ones where that you can see like, oh, people like me, people are interacting with my posts. They must enjoy what I'm posting.
Well, that's a great point. What you're doing is you're selling not just the product you're selling, but people want to be part of your tribe and they want to feel like they're part of something. And we as business owners want to be seen as honest arbiters of information. And we want to make sure it isn't just every single day that we're posting 10% off because you saw 10% off, but you try a number of different things so that you're able to figure out what worked, what didn't work, what was the click through, and not just the click through. You're saying, all right, use this coupon code, but you then have to be able to see when people are buying stuff, how often was that coupon code actually used, mm-hmm. as opposed to just being clicked through. So again, it's part of that journey. And I don't mean take a left-hand turn, but we've covered a lot of stuff and this has been very helpful. I want to just leave with one more question to Samantha. What piece of advice would you give a small business owner? It could be CRM, it could be whatever you want.
I do a lot of presentations to small businesses. And the place that I always start is to always understand who you're selling to. Because I think that just guides, and we've talked about this a little bit before in this podcast, but I think it is just so key. And once you understand who you're selling to, who your ideal customer is, figuring out your product offering, figuring out your marketing messaging, figuring out what platforms you should spend the most time on and where you should be spending your time and money, all of that becomes a bit more clear. So my advice is, yes, have a clear understanding as to what your product is and what you're offering, but even more so, understand who you're selling it to.
That is so awesome, Sam. Understand your customers. God, that's the craziest thing, right?
Crazy, crazy idea. So novel.
It's so different. Well, good. Well, Samantha, thank you so very much for your time. We appreciate your insight and your thoughts from your side of it. And from the Small Business Development Center, thanks for listening today. And with that, have a great day.
Thanks for listening to How to Business, a podcast by the Small Business Development Center in Chattanooga, Tennessee. If you liked this episode, please share it with a friend and be sure to subscribe on Spotify, Apple, Google, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll see you next week here on How to Business.